Hey, nosy neighbors, it's Kylie.
And I'm Mary.
And you're listening to Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Hi, neighbors.
Hey. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
It is time to throw away those leftovers.
Yes, if you still have any turkey, any food, then eat it.
5 days. 5 days max.
Feed it to the trash can.
Feed it to the trash.
Yes. Don't eat it. You'll get sick. Yuck, yuck.
Yeah. And we care about you.
Yes, we do. If you're like me, your Christmas tree went up the day after Thanksgiving. So
absolutely.
I hope it's all nice and cozy there.
And it just brings that light into your house and it brings your light into your heart.
Oh my gosh, especially when it gets dark at 4 p.m. and literally it brings light into your house.
Literally and
because
figuratively.
I think most all of my decorations light up. So It really does bring a glow.
It does. It really does. We should make a survey. Mm-hmm. White lights or colored lights?
Yes. Age old question.
Mm-hmm.
I like the white.
I know. So does your father. I like the color.
I know. Well, it depends because colored with kids is fun. But
yes,
you know, because there
I
is
have a colorful thing. Aura.
Yes, you do. You do.
And your dad has a white aura.
He does. Oh, man. And now I feel like my house, it feels like I live in a lake where there are pockets of cold and pockets of hot.
Walking
around.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Heat rises.
Yeah, but it'll be like a random thing where you're like, yes. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, cold.
Oh, that's funny.
I found this new podcast and it's my favorite now. It's called Scotland Yard Confidential. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but he's got a British accent.
Or Scottish.
No, British. Scotland Yard is in England. I always thought the same thing. I don't know why it's called Scotland Yard. Probably because it's like the UK. I don't know. I should look into that. But yeah, he tells his stories really cool. Like it's a story. You feel like you're listening to an audiobook, but it's real. Because he's like, Detective so-and-so sat in his chair and wondered, blah, blah, blah. You know?
Aww.
Yeah,
and that accent is so cool. You know, that's the number one accent.
Really?
They polled people.
Like the number one that we like?
Mm-hmm. They polled people and British was number one. And American was in the top five. I'm like, ooh, ours is boring. Our accent's boring.
What's interesting is the number of variations of the British accent. Like, I don't know if you watch British Baking Show, but just watching that alone, you get so many.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are quite proper and others you need subtitles.
I was going to say, I need subtitles. Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I don't really have a drink specifically. I still have gin at my home from the Negroni. I've been drinking it in two different ways. So I've got fun facts because we've already said both of these. The gin and tonic and the gimlet are both gin drinks, but they go back a long time ago, because back in the day, you used to have alcohol as part of your medicine.
Oh.
Fun fact.
Well, yeah.
So I guess, so we'll start with the gin and tonic. The British Royal Navy, England's soldiers, they often found themselves traveling to places where there was malaria. So they would have quinine rations to help fight the disease. So quinine tasted terrible. So Schweppes didn't know it was this long of a brand. Schweppes came out with an Indian tonic water to make it palatable, and then they mixed it with gin. So they had gin in order to take the malaria medicine, is where the gin and tonic came from.
That's hysterical.
Yes. Tonic water nowadays have a teeny bit of that quinine for flavor, but obviously we don't need it for malaria treatment.
This is true.
And then for the gimlet, it's because back in the 19th century, British Navy found themselves also fighting a battle against scurvy, which is a deficiency of vitamin C. So Mm-hmm. Since citrus fruits are the most effective antidote, sailors were given a daily quota of limes that they had to drink, which lime juice by itself, not great. So they added it to gin.
Gin.
So
love it.
Instead of a spoonful of sugar helping the medicine go down, it was
a spoonful of gin.
A shot.
It's a shot of gin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They added it.
And that's where the word shot came from. Yeah, you go, right? It's not injection, it's a shot.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah. So that's just some fun facts about where that came from. Because we're going back in time again. We're going to the early 1900s for our case. And in England.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So on June 30th, 1910, in Westminster, England, Detective Chief Inspector Walter Dew was approached about a missing woman. Detective Dew was 47 years old and had been on the force a few decades. He worked the Jack the Ripper case in 1888.
Oh, he's a pro.
Yes, although they never caught Jack the Ripper, so.
No, they didn't. No. That's one of those mysteries that will never be solved, I'm sure.
You can't. It's too much time has gone by. Theories only.
And they didn't collect DNA?
Nope. And even if they did, I wonder how well preserved anything would have been, you know?
Yes. The invention of the baggie didn't happen yet.
Yes, exactly. Sterilization was not even in our fourth thought, whatever.
Nothing.
So John and Lillian Nash came to Scotland Yard with concerns about their friend Cora Crippen. The couple, John was a theater manager and Lillian was a music hall artist. They had met Cora. The three of them were members of the Music Hall Ladies Guild. Cora was treasurer of this guild. It was a charitable organization that supported female performers who had fallen on hard times, which is really cool for them to be doing that.
Yeah, it's
cool.
The
Nashes had been touring in America and returned to find that their friend was dead, or so they've been told.
Oh.
Cora's husband, Dr. Holly Harvey Crippen, told them she'd fallen ill while traveling and eventually succumbed to the disease.
Was it scary?
Where was her gin and where was her gimlet? But something about the story didn't sit right with them. Not only that, soon after Cora's death, he was seen openly about with his typist secretary. The Ladies Guild had already begun their own investigation into what happened to Cora Crippen, but now they needed more official assistance. After meeting the Nashes, Detective Dew headed to the headquarters of Music Hall Ladies Guild on New Oxford Street, which was connected to the Princess Theatre. He was slightly skeptical and not totally convinced that there was a case, but thought he might as well go and see what information the group had gathered. They all knew Cora by her stage name, Belle Elmore.
They had stage names back then.
It was like a very flamboyant thing. In that Scotland Yard podcast, which was one of my sources for this case, as well as like articles and stuff, he said that, you know, it was a very like flamboyant group where they had stage names. They all had like peacock feathers and all of that stuff. So the detective, a lot of this, like he kept journals and stuff, was like very uncomfortable, like those bohemian type, like, you know.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
They're all gypsy, free thinker, whatever. Like,
extravagance.
Who's to say she didn't just run away on her own, you know?
Yeah, nomad life.
So she had come to London in 1897 to pursue her dream of being a singer. Unfortunately, she was not a good singer.
In her mind, she was a shower singer.
Oh, yes. Did they have showers then?
That's a good question. I guess it's a tub singer.
But she figured if she couldn't make it on the stage, she could still be a part of the community. So she joined that guild and she became a huge member who never missed a meeting. So everyone was surprised when she was a no-show.
Absent.
Yes, on February 2nd. The Nashes were visiting America when Dr. Crippen's secretary, the woman that he'd been seen about, Ethel Leneve, visited guild member Melinda May and gave her a letter. The letter was written by Dr. Mm-hmm. Crippen saying that Cora had gone to America owing to the illness of some relatives and that a new treasurer should be elected for a few months. Suspicions increased on February 2nd when Dr. Crippen, on February 20th, sorry, when Dr. Crippen attended a charity event for the guild with Ethel on his arm. Stranger still was Ethel Mm-mm. was wearing Cora's diamond brooch. Yes, weeks passed without news from their friend, and they continually checked in for updates, asking Crippen, like, hey, where is she? Haven't heard mm-hmm. from her. Where's an address where we can reach her? Nothing. Finally, he tells them that during her travels, she had fallen ill with pneumonia.
Oh.
Then, on March 24th, he told them that she died while she was in California.
Because no one's going to check up.
Yeah, because she's in a whole different country. Mm-hmm. And then he immediately left for France for, quote, change of air.
With that other chick on his arm?
Oh, yeah. When he returned, he wore an armband because they used to wear those black armbands to show that they were in mourning.
Mm-hmm. Mourning. Mm-hmm.
But he didn't really act as if he was in mourning. In fact, he had already moved Ethel into his marital home.
It was a nuisance. The black armband was a nuisance.
Oh, yeah, they don't do that anymore.
No, I mean for him.
Oh,
man, I gotta put this thing on again.
I thought you meant
I gotta wear this garter.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. So Cora had been fine the last time the group saw her. Great health. They didn't mm-hmm. believe the doctor and decided to investigate. So they wrote to the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce to ask about her. Because Crippen had told them that she was cremated in L.A. They responded to say they had no record of Cora dying in March of 1910.
Ooh, the plot thickens.
Then they contacted all shipping lines with routes to America. Mm-hmm. They confirmed there were no passengers named Crippen who traveled to America on or around February 2nd, like the letter said. Next, they hired a private investigator to try and find answers. Huh. He couldn't find anything out, so finally they went to Scotland Yard for help.
We should do a Patreon episode of the history of private investigators.
That's a good one.
I should write that down.
Because there is like a licensing that's involved, mm-hmm. and obviously they've been around since
the early 1900s, at least.
Yeah, like you hear of PIs. And for the most, like for a lot of it, I think it's retired
cops
or ex-cops mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So
yeah.
That blew my mind, by the way, how much the guild did looking this for their friend huge. Before they got. So pretty much this detective goes in and is like, they're just bummed out that their friend died in a different country and they missed out, you know?
Yep, they miss her.
That's what he goes into it thinking. And then he gets there and they're like, oh, no, we wrote everywhere and nothing is true. We've caught this doctor in two lies and. He's already got another lady. And
they probably said, here's our folder. Look at our folder.
Yes. Like, here it is. And I love that it's a group of women that just, like, got shit done. Yes.
We had a notion that this happened and here's our proof. So we did our job for, we did your job for you.
We are looking out for our friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, here you go. Now get the man. So Cora was born in Brooklyn on September 3rd, 1873 to immigrant parents Joseph, Makamatsky. He was a Russian-Polish man. And Maria Mersinger, she was German. They had named her Kunigund Makmotsi. Yeah, a name she later changed to Cora Turner.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
Yes.
It's because everybody's butchering it.
Yeah, exactly. She left home at 16 to pursue a theater career. Probably another big reason she changed her name. Even though she used a stage name, though, too. So.
mm-hmm.
When Dr. Crippen met her, she was 19 years old and an aspiring performer and opera singer.
Okay.
Cora Crippen was intimidating and extravagant, which is a big contrast to the meek, gentle, diminutive Dr. Crippen. Yes, if you look at pictures, she's like a bigger lady, and her photos, she's dressed like flamboyantly.
Full of life.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he's freaky looking. He's little with big eyes and big glasses and a mustache. He looks off. He reminds me of when Eddie Murphy dressed as a white man. That's what he looks like.
He looks off.
Yes.
So we'll post pictures on our socials.
Yes. Every source that you listen to or read, or even if you just see a photo, they all mention how weird he looks. So he was born in 1862 in Coldwater, Michigan. His first wife died from a stroke in 1893. And he married his second wife, Cora Turner, in Jersey City, America.
Wow.
7 years later, 1900, they moved to London.
Oh, okay.
I know. So it's some American on American crime in London, which I was like, yes. But whatever.
It covers both.
Yeah. He was employed as a representative for Munyon's Remedies, a company making homeopathic remedies, while Cora, using that name, Belle Elmore, had aspirations to be a musical artist. Fortunately, like we said, she had no talent.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. But she did manage to make friends in show business and to continue to have a life in theater, and even secured that position of treasurer of the Music Hall Ladies Guild in London. In 1905, the married couple took out a lease on a place at 39 Hilldrop Crescent in Holloway, a district in the London borough of Islington. It was a big place, so they often took boarders to help pay for it. Which is so interesting. It's like being a landlord without being a landlord. Like, you can't do that nowadays. Be like, I'm going to get a big house and then just let randos come here and pay me.
Like, I have got an extra bedroom. Here you go.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot more paperwork involved nowadays.
Yep.
On July 8th, Chief Inspector Walter Dew of the Metropolitan Police and his partner, Detective Sergeant Mitchell, visited Dr. Crippen at his home. So July 8th is that next day after he went and talked with the guilds.
Okay.
So pretty much he was like, whoa, you got a lot of stuff. Went and got his partner. Next day went to talk to the man. When they arrived, they found Ethel Lenevre there, but Dr. Crippen was away at work. So they left to confront the doctor about the concerns of Cora's friends and colleagues.
Okay.
The doctor greeted the men and changed his story.
Of course.
He told Detective Dew that Cora was not dead, but alive.
Oh.
She had left him for another man.
Another man.
They always do it, right? Mm-hmm. Likely an American she'd met in 1903 named Bruce Miller. Crippen said he had lied about being left by Cora because he was humiliated by it. In fact, things had been no good between the couple for a minute. Part of the allure to their new large home was the fact that they could have separate bedrooms. Soon after they moved there, Crippen had found his wife in bed with one of the lodgers of their home. And she began to have affairs with other men. Meanwhile, Crippen had already fallen in love with his typist, Ethel Clara Lenevre, a few years earlier. Finding his wife with a lodger prompted him to consummate his own relationship with Ethel.
Oh, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander,
right?
Or whatever that is.
I know, because two wrongs make a right, and since you did it, I can do it too. But also, it's his story of events here. Like, she did it first, so then I did it. According to him.
Yeah.
And also according to him, all physical relations between him and Cora stopped around 1907.
Oh, okay.
The men returned to the home on Hilldrop Crescent, and Crippen showed the detectives around the house, which is never good if you can't, like, free search. But, you know, the early 1900s, I feel like the searches were so more proper, you know? Yes. Like, let's yes. not go into the ladies' undergarment drawer.
You could look everywhere except for behind this door.
Uh-huh, when they were like, oh, yes, of course, thank you for your hospitality.
Yes.
You know, let us not question what is behind the door.
Don't look behind the curtain.
So they didn't find anything. They were still suspicious of him, because that dude's freaky looking, but they left. Du told Crippen it would be better if Cora contacted him to confirm the story, and Dr. Crippen said he would place an advertisement in newspapers in America asking her to make contact.
That's funny.
Right?
It's funny how, the things, correspondence were via newspaper.
Yes, because nowadays it would be like, hey, can you tell her to call us? And he'd be like, yeah, I'll call around, I'll find her, and then she'll call you. But that's not what they could do back then. It was, hey, can you have her write to us? Yes, I will place advertisements where I think she is in California, and I will have her write to you promptly.
So put something in the want ads.
Right? Investigations would probably like carry out forever.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one, though. This one concludes in a year. So Detective Du returned the following day to ask more questions and do follow-up, only to find that Dr. Crippen and his mistress Ethel had left.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
The note they left claimed it was to escape scandal, but Detective Du thought they were escaping more than that.
Oh, yeah.
Police searched the home again and initially found nothing. Then Detective Du got nosy in the basement and started poking around, literally, with a poker.
One of those off-limit rooms?
Yep.
Okay.
He found loose flooring on the kitchen coal cellar. Officers were ordered in to make a more thorough search, and beneath those bricks, they found the remains of a body.
Oh no, buried in the house?
The body was headless, limbless, and boneless.
Oh, gosh.
A little more than pieces of flesh.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
It was also, quote, desexed. So that was also missing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, everything.
So they need to find Crippen.
Okay.
Meanwhile, a ship captain on his way to Canada was becoming suspicious of an overly affectionate father and son traveling on his boat.
Oh no, she dressed as a man. This reminds us of another story. Didn't that happen before? Okay.
Yes, that's why I was like, did
the Red Barn. That Red Barn one. Okay.
They traveled. Yup. And I was like, wow, I feel like this is familiar. That's why. Mm-hmm. That's why. So Captain Henry Kendall of the SS Montrose was headed to Canada when he noticed a father and his older son holding hands.
That's not all he was holding.
Yeah, I know, right? His hand was in his pocket. I'm just kidding.
Playing pocket pool. Sorry.
Descriptions of the, quote, London cellar murderers were out and sent, had been, you know, distributed.
Okay.
And they were very detailed. I don't have them listed here, but I can recall a little bit off memory. And it's funny because it would described Dr. Crippen as like he walked with his feet outwards, had a set of false wooden teeth, wore spectacles, had a big mustache.
I was going to say that mustache game. I looked him up. Holy cow.
Huge mustache. So obviously he changed his appearance, but they didn't mention like has creepy buggy outy eyes. Yeah. So he had shaved his mustache and was growing a beard.
Oh.
And when I say beard, like no mustache beard, like the Amish kind.
Okay. Just like a chin strap.
Uh-huh. And then it described Ethel as being small, timid, you know, and her mannerisms and stuff.
Okay.
So the captain then kind of played detective. He became his own Sherlock Holmes. So while on the boat, he said, because everybody kept diaries back then, man. So he said that he tried to get Dr. Crippen to laugh, to check out his teeth. And he would also try and call him by like the different name to see if he would like
slip up.
So he was going by, I think, Dr. Robinson or something. something. And he would say, Robinson, Robinson. And it wasn't until Ethel like nudged him to be like, that's you, that he would respond and stuff. And his gait and everything. So something really cool was this SS Montrose had a new invention on board, which was the wireless telegraph. So they could communicate with other boats and back to land.
Okay, we got your guy.
Yes. So after, so he like checked him out for a while. Once he was sure, he sent a telegraph to Scotland Yard to let them know that he was pretty sure that they were on his boat traveling as father and son. And
we like, got your dude.
The description. Which, side note, the only reason that this captain noticed them was because they decided to travel in first class. Because the captain only mingles with the first class people. If they had like gone coach, they would have been fine.
If they were down in the cellar.
Yep, no one would have noticed.
Okay.
So Detective Dew set out on a faster transatlantic ocean liner called the Laurentic and was able to get to Montreal 3 days before the Montrose so they could have the couple arrested on the ship. Wow. And they were eventually taken back to England to face trial.
Apprehended.
Yes. It was decided the pair should not be tried together. Crippen would face his trial first, and once that verdict was determined, Ethel and Nev would take her turn to be tried as an accessory.
Okay.
On October 18th, what a great day. Dr. Crippen stood alone before the Lord Chief Justice of England, Lord Alverstone. Because you think of their courts and they've got all the wigs and all the lawyers and stuff. So when it says stood alone, he literally is just standing at the bottom.
Wow.
And the proceedings would last until October 22nd.
Oh.
So Crippen's defense was simple. The body in the cellar of his home wasn't Cora's. It must have been someone, some poor woman that was in there before they moved in.
That body's been there forever. Oh,
that
I see.
That body was there before I moved in.
Yeah. Just the bone. Just the body. No bones.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
So one piece of flesh in that shallow grave had a scar, and they were able to prove with medical records that Cora had that same scar on her abdomen.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. More conclusive was the fact that the remains had been wrapped in a pajama jacket. And the tag inside of the jacket led to the manufacturer's Jones Brothers. They confirmed that this cloth and pattern was not issued until 1908, proving that the body must have been placed there after 1908.
Wow.
And they had moved there in 1905.
I thought you were going to say the initials were in it or something.
I know. Wouldn't that be neat?
Yeah.
But not that as definitive. But the fact that it was in there in his pajamas and the scar, they were able to determine that it must be Cora.
Wow. And back then, when you had any type of surgery, I'm sure the scars were huge.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like they would know, be like, oh, yeah, I cut open her abdomen. Because how many times were they doing it successfully?
Yeah. And yeah, the patient lived. Yes.
Medical tests showed traces of hyoscine, which is a poison. And it was known that Dr. Crippen had purchased that substance on January 17th. 2 weeks before his wife had vanished.
Oh.
It was enough for the jury, who took just under 30 minutes, to find Dr. Crippen guilty of his wife's murder.
Okay.
On October 25th, Ethel Levine was put on trial as an accessory to murder. However, she was found not guilty. It showed that she really thought that she ran away. She, like, poor Ethel, she was young. She was young, meek, and like literally thought that this
like, oh, how convenient, she ran away, now we can be together.
Yes, exactly. I believe everything you say. So she went on to like have a life and get married and have kids and all of that. On Wednesday, November 23rd, 1910. Oh, hey, that was last week.
Dr. Crippen was
hanged. Yeah. At Pentonville by John Ellis and William Willis. Oh, weird. We know the names.
Hanged by the neck until he was dead.
And may God have mercy on your soul. That's like what they always say.
Bum, bum, bum.
Dr. Cribbin's last request had been for a photograph of Ethel in some of her letters to be buried with him in his unmarked grave, and the request was granted.
Oh.
He really loved her.
Poor Ethel.
You know who else he reminds me of? Do you remember Ace Ventura, The Call of the Wild, when he knocks out the guy and then puts him on his shoulders? He reminds me of Dr. Crippen.
It looks more like Eddie Murphy dressed as a white man. Guy.
Yeah. We'll stick with that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he was like a meek whatever, and I don't know if he snapped or what, but he killed her. But what's interesting, two things. Well, actually, I'll say a few things. This is one of the detective's biggest cases. It was really big in the news. They were really upset that Crippen was able to get away. So the fact that he was caught by the captain was like a huge deal.
Yeah.
It was the first time that the wireless telegraph was used to
apprehend someone?
Apprehend anybody. Yes. There was a toy manufactured back in 1910 afterwards that was of Crippen being hanged. So, yes, just to let you know that morbid thing existed. Yep. Like just picturing him doing all of that. Like
I need a pickaxe.
And do all these things and then put it down there. Wow. But it also makes you wonder, like, I don't know how suspicious Detective Dew was if he didn't flee that literal next day. If he had just like stuck around, maybe he wouldn't have been found out. Or like if they didn't travel on first class, maybe he wouldn't have been found out.
One different decision.
And because it was so easy to get away with murder back then.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't check the house a second time, you would have been like, sorry, guilt. I mean, she left you. I don't know what to tell you. People can do that nowadays.
Exactly.
Oh, the other thing is that there have been things in the press in the 21st century about this case, because there are people that believe that Crippen is innocent and the body in the basement was not Cora's.
Whose was it?
So, we don't know, but...
I mean, it's not like a basement body turns up every day.
Right?
Wow.
There are supposedly descendants that claim to be from Cora in the United States is one thing, but, like, how do you test that? You know, how somebody can just claim. And also, the body, if it's not hers, then it's just somebody else that he killed and wrapped in his jacket.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it has no win there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no one else he'd want to kill, really.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there was no one else that he would need to, so... Yeah,
because he wanted to be with the new chick.
Exactly. And it sounded like, I mean, he was more of the submissive one in the relationship, too. Mm-hmm. So there could have been a explosive argument. Like, we don't know the intimate details of their
marriage. He poisoned her so that he could subdue her.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He wanted someone more like him, meek.
Yes, exactly. Somebody where he was the one in control rather than the one being controlled.
Like, I'm going to grab those pants back.
And then put them on my little boy mistress. I guess that part of it, too, was that the boy clothes were ill-fitting on her.
Yes.
So they were like, that's not your suit.
There wasn't a consignment shop back then.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like little boy clothes. And they're like, why are they safety pinned like that? why isn't it all tailored to you?
Why don't they fit you and you're in first class?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, if they want to do a Harry Potter and Dudley Dursley elephant skin thing, they should have been down in the basement.
Yeah. That is a niche Harry Potter reference, and if you get that, you're awesome. So anyways, that is the London Cellar Murders.
Wow. It has a title.
1910. Yep. It dies.
1910.
Which is funny, because I'm pretty sure most people were buried under rocks in the cellar back in the early 1900s.
Well, we had that other London one where she was, or
was
he
in
was
kitchen.
In the kitchen under the flagstones.
Yep. So yeah. Same concept. That's where they just put everybody.
And they flee. They also fled.
Yeah. Yep. They just played it cool, man.
Stay
they put. Away with it.
Stay put.
Blend in where you are put. Yeah. Blend in plain sight, right?
Well, thank you for telling me.
You're welcome. Make sure that you guys listen to your mothers.
And make good choices.
Stay nosy, neighbors.
Cheers.
Cheers. Clark. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Mary.
I'm Kylie.
And you've been listening to Sipping with Snacked, a true crime podcast.
Be sure to follow us on our Instagram at Sipping with Snapped.
Twitter at Sipping Snapped.
Facebook, Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Join our Patreon, Sipping with Snapped.
And if you forget all that, go to our website,
www.sippingwithsnapped.com.
We've got links to everything.
Cheers.
Logan, say I love you.